This is a Hog Sports Network podcast. This is the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast, presented by Kendall King, the first podcast devoted entirely to Arkansas baseball, featuring insight from Arkansas baseball color analyst Bubba Carpenter. Here's your host, Matt Jones.
And welcome into the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast. Bubba Carpenter, Matt Jones here. We appreciate you being with us. We're going live today for the first time on our podcast, 6 years. First time we've done a live broadcast. We appreciate those of you who are watching us live today. This will also be loaded where all of our podcasts are loaded a little bit later on. Bubba, let's start with Arkansas State last night at Baum Walker Stadium. The Razorbacks win 13-0 in seven innings. And I thought, you know, given everything, the opponent, the weather, it was really, really cold for this game. They wanted to get some pitchers some work. They got them work. It was a one-hitter. They run-ruled it. It didn't feel like that game could have gone much better for the Razorbacks.
Oh, it was perfect. And, yeah, I think that says a lot about this team, Matt, is they don't overlook. Like, you look at all the stuff that's going on Tuesday nights around the country, all the teams losing. Mm-hmm. You don't see that happening with this team. And I talked about it last night on the air, how this team looks like a team that just likes playing baseball. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if it's a Tuesday night or a Saturday night at Baum Walker with it packed. They just like going out and playing. And there's guys coming off that bench that are fighting for a weekend spot. There's guys coming out of the bullpen fighting for a weekend spot, a roster spot. So, man, they approach it like we're playing. It's Tuesday night's no different than a Saturday night at Baum Walker with these guys. And I love it. I just love watching them going out and play.
And there's so many, kind of you alluded to this, there's so many players who don't get to play on the weekend necessarily who, right. You know, I mean, that's their time to shine. I don't know that any of the pitchers who threw against Arkansas State had pitched on the weekend prior. I don't think there were. I may be missing one pitcher. A lot of guys like Peyton Holt got in the lineup last night. Jason Jones, you know, got a pinch hit at bat. Really, I think everybody that could have played last night played from a position standpoint, except maybe Parker Rowland at catcher. Maybe Hudson Polk didn't get into the game. But the point is, a lot of guys are getting their opportunities, and they're making the most of it.
Right. And you and I have talked about the run rule. Mm-hmm. The only bad thing about the run rule is not enough guys are getting out there. There's still more guys that we'd like to have seen yesterday. And there's guys you just mentioned, Parker Rowland, love to have gotten him in at bat last night, and, mm-hmm. and Hudson Polk, and probably a couple more guys out of that bullpen. You know, Cooper Dossett goes out, gets two quick outs, and he comes
surprised.
Out. Yeah, he was
surprised when he was coming out.
When DVH came out, he was looking at him like, I'm good.
Yeah.
But then you want to get Parker Coyle in there and face a lefty, and he struck the lefty out. So it's the run rule is good, but then the run rule at the same time can cost you, you know, opportunities if you're a guy struggling and fighting and scratching and clawing to mm-hmm. get in that lineup.
I think what you're saying, and I just haven't seen any depth from the pitching like what we're seeing right now. And we talked about it ad nauseum this year, but these Tuesday, Wednesday games are games that usually will make a coach pull their hair out. And I know Arkansas hadn't had to play any Wednesday games yet. That's coming. They're going to play San Jose State twice next week. They play Texas Tech twice the week after that. They've still got a two-game series coming up against Missouri State later in this season on a Tuesday and a Wednesday. But it's as comfortable, I think, as I've ever seen the Razorbacks on a Tuesday night with their pitching. It's, like I said, Dave Van Horn said it best this week. He said a lot of times, he said, if I could have rained out Tuesday nights every game, I would have. That's not the case this year.
It's not. And here's the thing that stood out to me. And I don't always look at ERA, but I just look at what we ran out at Arkansas State last night. Colin Fisher, ERA 2.25. Ben Bibee, ERA 0. Jake Faraday, 2.70. Gage Wood, 2.53. You know, Cooper Dossett's at a 5.68. But that's just really a couple of bad pitches. Mm-hmm. You know, Park curls up a little bit. And then Dylan Carter, 2.08. I mean, look at those ER run averages running out there on a Tuesday night. Mm. How many other teams in the country can do that? And, I mean, it's incredible. It really is. And like I said, none of these guys pitched last weekend. I think a few of them will be on the roster this weekend and mm-hmm. possibly get a chance if the opportunity arises. But it's just incredible to me that what we're throwing out there at teams on a Tuesday night, no one else can do that in the country.
I'm interested to see how it's going to go when they get to those five-game weeks where they've got to stretch guys out a little bit more. So, you know, like, for instance, you might throw them an inning on a Tuesday. Maybe because they've got to play Tuesday and Wednesday, maybe you stretch this guy out for 2 to 3 innings. I'm interested to see how that's going to go moving forward. But right now, midweek-wise, you couldn't ask for much better. You couldn't ask for any better game than that last night. They scored 13 two-out runs over the first three innings. And I know Arkansas State's not a good team, but that's what you're supposed to do to those types of teams. And then to be able to do it with two outs just seemed like it just demoralized the opponent.
It really does. I mean, the two out two strike RBI hit is just a dagger to that pitcher. We've seen these guys do it all year. I mean, whether they're answering back against LSU, they punch back multiple times. But last night, just the two out rallies where they're able to string multiple hits together. And, you know, DVH talks about it all the time. It's so hard to string multiple hits together, yet these guys are able to do it. And, boy, if you make a mistake, we make you pay for it.
Nolan Souza hit a grand slam 458 feet. Is that right?
I think it's 458, 111 off the bat. Can I tell you something about that?
Sure.
So every once in a while you get a feeling when you're sitting in the booth, right? And I'll like call it, and I'll get lucky and call it right. I told Phil last night, and I hope he's still got that. I hope he's got it on. I know it's somewhere out there. Mm-hmm. I looked at him and I said, "Get ready right here. We're going to see a grand slam." He had a 1-0 count. He had walked Diggs. Missed with the first pitch, got behind 1-0, bases are loaded. And I knew the guy was going to come with a fastball because he didn't want to fall behind 2-0. And I just looked at Phil and said, "Get ready. He's getting ready to hit a grand slam right here." Next pitch, bam, crushed it. Made me feel really good for a minute.
I lost track of the ball. That thing went a long way.
Hey, he crushed it right off the bat. I mean, I was like, I was going crazy. Because the first thing I do, you know the sound of a ball hit well. It just makes a different sound.
As a hitter, you don't feel it, right?
No, you don't feel it. Everything. I don't know if you golf, when you hit that perfect drive. Yeah. Every once in a while when I hit that.
Haven't achieved that yet.
I don't play much anymore. I don't have time. But when you hit that perfect driver right down the middle, it just feels different. That's how it feels when you square up a baseball. But made a different sound off the bat. And so the first thing I did is look down at TrackMan 111, and I'm like, man, that is way gone to center field. So we went to the right of the batter's eye, and it was 458 feet. And happy for Souza to get that pitch and put that swing on it. The kid's special. I love him.
It was kind of a punctuation mark. It was a 9-run inning for Arkansas in the third. That's their highest scoring inning of the year. Their previous was an 8-run inning in the sixth inning of their 18-5 win over McNeese State back in March. Arkansas is in the coaches' poll, number one again this week. They're number one in all the polls. But it's kind of a milestone week for them in the coaches' poll because it's their 100th consecutive week to be ranked in the coaches' poll. And so I was thinking about this. You began calling games on RSN in 2018. They've never been unranked for a game you've called because this run began in 2017. It's the longest run of any program. And then it's not just the fact they're ranked. You know, I mean, there are a lot of teams that hang around the rankings in the 20, 25, up to 15, 12. They're staying in the top 10 very consistently. And in this 100 weeks, 52 of the last 54 weeks, they've been ranked in the top 10, and 15 of those, obviously, they've been ranked number one. This is a really remarkable run of success, I think, that they're having.
So is there a stat about the Bubba Carpenter effect?
Well, I guess it'd be the Rick Schaefer effect. He was still in your seat before.
that's true. No, I tell you what, it's incredible what they've been able to do. Yeah. And you know, every once in a while, I'll do a show with Z and Q and get on there, and it's kind of neat the three color guys all on there at the same time. And I'll tell them, I say, hey, look, you know, I feel for you guys because especially Quinn, you know, well, both of them. There's been some lean times when they're doing their job. I haven't had to deal with that. I mean, every night I go there and I get to watch great baseball. And, I mean, I'm fortunate. I'm blessed to be able to do that because my job's easy. I get to watch us play Razorback baseball and just talk a little bit about it on the air. And it's a fun thing to do.
I call this the golden age of Arkansas baseball. Would you – I mean, you played during a really good age, too, in the 80s. But it's – this run is success. I don't think there's ever been anything like it.
I think you're right. I really do. And here's what's crazy. When I first started doing it, you know, I would jokingly say, you know, like we'd get together for deer camp and some of the former players would come around. We all sit around the cooler. And, you know, by the end of the night when the cooler's empty, we were like, we'd beat these guys if we played them, you know. And now I look at it and they're so much better. These guys are so much better than we were. Now, we played it was a different brand of baseball, obviously, back then. But, I mean, Coach D was big on fundamentals. But, I mean, we weren't this good. I mean, we were ranked. There were multiple times we were top five in the country back in those days. And we had a good team. But had that team played this team, I don't know, might not have been good. They're just better, Matt. They're I think the training's better. I think the technology's better. I think these guys are more prepared. It took me a long time to figure stuff out. These guys are figuring it out at such a young age, and it's incredible.
You began pro ball in 91, 92? 91. So in 1991, the level of college baseball today would have been equivalent to what level of pro ball at that time?
91. I'd say the level we were playing was probably high A ball.
Okay.
Where right now you look at these guys, they're playing. This is double A. You're okay. Better. I mean, the some of the stuff you're seeing. I mean, it's really incredible. I mean, and what these guys are learning to do now. It took me years into pro ball to start learning a lot of this stuff. Mm. And with the technology they have, they're learning it now. Whether you're talking pitchers, you know, some of the technology with the hitters and all that, it's incredible the age of baseball that we're in right now. And plus, you look at these guys, baseball's older now. I mean, if you look at SEC, look at all the older players right now with the transfer portal and all that. You're seeing the best baseball you've ever seen now in college baseball.
Well, and the lineup right now is not the same as it was on opening day, but I wrote on opening day that Arkansas's opening day lineup this year on average was 14 months older than it was just 5 years ago on opening day. That's a huge jump in age.
It's huge. I mean, it makes a giant difference. I mean, just every year, I know just in my development how much I changed from year to year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not just physically. A lot of it is strength, but a lot of it is just the mental aspect of the game is learning to slow the game down. And you know, it takes time. It takes, you know, maturity to do that. And once again, that goes back to some of our freshmen. We look at like a Gabe Gackle. What he's able to do as a freshman is incredible to me because he's going into some pressure situations as a freshman. Doesn't faze him at all. I mean, that's just it's remarkable.
The coaches poll debuted in 2004. I think the previous best run Arkansas ever had in the coaches poll in terms of consecutive weeks ranked was 61. They're at 100. They're not slowing down anytime soon. It's pretty incredible what's going on right now. I made up a word during the LSU series. Respondability, and that's basically the ability to respond, and that's what you keep seeing from this team. It seemed like every time that, and we've seen it throughout the year, but every time LSU would score, next half inning, there's a response, maybe an inning and a half later, but there's a great response by the lineup. And you know, for a team that's not scoring a whole lot of runs, you know, Arkansas, I think they're like middle of the pack SEC, obviously batting average, everything is lower half of the conference right now. There's this uncanny ability for them to respond in these games. And I think that's the mark of a good team. And they have not been behind very often this season. You know, they get behind 2-0, 4-1 in the last game against LSU. Inning and a half later, that lead's gone, and there they go again.
Respondability. Is that like if I ask Siri, is Siri going to know the definition of respondability?
Google didn't know. I checked it the other day. It didn't know.
Well, okay. I like the word. I like the word. I invent a lot of words on the air. Most of them I can't say on the
air.
Most of
them you shouldn't say.
But respondability, I like it. But okay. So I'm a money ball guy. And if you look at, for me, it's about runs scored versus runs allowed. Mm. You know, how many runs do we have to score to win this game?
Yeah.
And we're not scoring a ton of runs. But if you look, I mean, we scored 190 runs.
Mm-hmm.
We've given up 73. That's a really good ratio. And if you look at all the other teams in SEC, I think A&M is the only other team that has a ratio better than ours. And A&M is a good team.
They haven't played the same schedule either.
No, they have not. You know, so I think that's kind of the secret sauce right there is, I mean, it's simple. We keep them from scoring and then we score enough to win. But what our team's doing is we're not striking out. You saw it last night. We get the bases loaded. We get two consecutive strikeouts. All right. The guy found his slider and threw some really good sliders. So we get two outs. What happens? Peyton Holt, you know, puts the ball in play. Doesn't hit it hard, but hits it out there. Shortstop has a tough play coming in, throws the ball away. We score two runs. That's an example of how we're able to score runs, just by putting the ball in play. If you can eliminate your strikeouts and draw some walks and keep that lineup going and just put pressure on the other team's pitcher, good things are going to happen. And that's what this team's doing, Matt. And I love it. because you and I talk a lot. I hate strikeouts. Mm-hmm. I really do. Now, there's a difference in a strikeout with two outs and no one on base versus a strikeout with runners at second and third, one out. You know, those are two different things. But yeah, I just don't like them.
Dave Van Horn said at Swatters Club on Monday that he's given the take sign to this team more this year. He said probably more this year than the last 20 years combined. And so, you know, that's probably contributing to the lack of strikeouts is just the fact that they're not given a lot of freedom right now to swing away.
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of that is Dave still learning his players. You know, he gave Vahiva Aloy.
He gave him a 3-0 green light.
Against the lefty from LSU, Ackerson or something like that, Ackenhausen, whatever his name was, gave him a 3-0 green light, and he rolled over to third base. Mm-hmm. He hit it, I think, 92 miles an hour, but he got rolled over. It's not the kind of swing you want 3-0. If you want to prove to your coach you can get the green light 3-0, you better hit that thing hard when you get a 3-0 count. May not get a hit, but you got to hit it hard. And so, he's there's been a lot of and I don't know obviously when they're taken. A lot of times you can look at a hitters load different when they're taken. I call it loading to take versus loading to crush. You can tell a lot of times, oh, he was taken right there, but. You know, Dave's got a good feel for the game. He knows his players. And I think as we get through the season, you're going to know who you can trust 2-0, 3-0 in those situations and who you can't.
Can a pitcher figure out when a hitter's taking?
If the hitter's doing his job, no. You know what I hate is when you give a guy a take sign and he just kind of stands there, just like this, static, no load, nothing. Well, that tells the pitcher right there he ain't swinging, so he's going to throw it right down the middle. Mm-hmm. I want my guys, when I give a take sign, look like you're getting ready to hit that ball over the batter's eye. Get up there and, you know, foam at the mouth, you know, give him a stink eye, something. Make it look like you're getting ready to hammer that ball and scare the guy out of the zone.
Mm. So let's talk about the LSU series. Game one, Arkansas wins 7-4. The big swing of the game is Kendall Diggs' 3-run home run in the 8th inning. At that point, it's a 4-3 game. That makes it 7-3. LSU scores a run. That's, you know, pretty irrelevant to the result at the end. They get another good start from Hagan Smith, although there were a couple of solo home runs hit against him. The interesting thing about Hagan right now is that all of the runs that have scored against him this year have been via home run. There was a 3-run home run against James Madison in the opener, and there have been 3 solo home runs since then. Those are the 6 runs that have scored against him. But, you know, he had a really good night, I thought. Maybe not his best night, but it's a solid night, and it's, you know, if – Hagan Smith's holding the other team to 2 runs, you're probably going to win that game. And that's what happened. But Diggs, it seems like he comes up in these, you know, RBI situations so often. I was looking this up, 21 home runs. I don't think he hit another one the rest of the weekend. So 21 home runs in his career, 7 of them have been for 3 runs. He's got 2 grand slams, one of them being against LSU last year in Baton Rouge, and then he's got 4, I think, 2-run home runs. It's amazing what he's able to do home run-wise with runners on base.
Well, it's one of those situations, it's not what you hit, it's when you hit. And Kendall's a guy that you want up there in that situation. And that at-bat, that sequence, though, was he learned from Ben McLaughlin's at-bat.
Yeah. I thought this was fascinating.
Yeah, it's, you know, because once again, I don't get it right all the time, but I saw the pitch sequence to Ben, and then Kendall comes up. He does the same thing. He throws a get-me-over breaking ball. It's got a little hump in it, so you could see it. Mm-hmm. He took it. Then he threw the nasty one that's sharp, ended up in the dirt. Kendall swung at it, just like Ben did. And I said, if he comes in right here, Kendall's going to crush it. And just like he did with Ben McLaughlin, came in 0-2, froze Ben, struck him out, came into Kendall 0-2, actually a good pitch right on the black. Kendall hits it a mile over the building. That's a smart hitter, Matt. That's a hitter that's watching the guys in front of him and saying, okay, you know, because if you're calling pitches, you can't pattern like that because good hitters see that. And if you don't, then you need to start seeing it because that's hitting 101.
So LSU pinch ran for their catcher in the 8th inning. So they brought in their backup catcher. Do you think it's a backup catcher not sequencing well enough?
Okay, so I asked that question. I said, would Travinsky have done that? And I was told that that they weren't calling it, that the coaching staff
was calling
it.
From the dugout.
The pitching coach, whatever his name is.
Nate Yeske.
Yeah, he was. I heard they said he was calling the pitches. So coach has to know that. I'm sorry. Matt Hobbs would not – if Matt Hobbs was calling pitches, he wouldn't have sequenced it the same, I promise you.
I mean, Yeske's considered one of the better pitching coaches. He was at Oregon State when they won national championships, was at A&M last year, had been at Arizona with Jay Johnson, then rejoined him at LSU. Diggs, before he hit the home run, he kind of stepped out of the box. I think you probably saw this. He just took a minute or took a second. And it was almost like you could almost see like the wheels turning in his mind. In retrospect, it's like, okay, you know, just thinking through the at-bat that he had just seen from McLaughlin and kind of, you know, setting himself up for that 0-2 swing.
I think you're right. I think – so what I want my guys to do when I teach hitting, you don't think when you're in the box. You step out of the box, take a deep breath, you step back in, and you execute that plan for that pitch. And I think that's what Kendall did. Now, was he looking dead red fastball in? No, 0-2 count, you don't ever do that. But in the back of his mind, he had a really good idea that that guy was coming in. I interviewed him after the game and talked about it. And I love talking to Kendall. You know, most of my post-game interviews aren't very long. When I interview Kendall, it gets long because I can talk hitting with Kendall all day. And he's just a guy that gets it. And that's why he's going to play a long time, Matt, because he understands the game. He's so far ahead of where I was, you know, in college at this age. I mean, just mentally, just his understanding of the game.
Game two, Arkansas wins 4-3 in 10 innings. Hudson White has the big hit at the end to score Will Edmondson. When Edmondson got on base, well, it was an error by the shortstop that got him on base. I thought, okay, this is their chance, because I've seen Edmondson run in scrimmages. Wilmsmeyer might be their best base runner, but Edmondson's not far behind him.
Yeah, I love him on the bases. You know, you could be really fast and not be a good base runner. You can also be slow and be a good base runner. I don't know, Albert Pujols, before he got really slow, he was a good base runner. He wasn't fast at all, but he was a great base runner. When he came, when he got on base and Edmondson came, or Hudson White comes up, we're looking, and Phil said something about they're playing no doubles. And I looked at Tommy White. Tommy White was not on the line. And, you know, I came up the way I'm taught, whether you're playing first or third base, that ball cannot go by you. If you're playing third base, can't go to your right. You have to keep that ball to your left. So he wasn't bad positioning right there. But what was worse than Tommy White's positioning was the left fielder. Bingham's playing shallow and over in left center.
Way off the line.
Huge mistake right there. And I don't know if it's Jay Johnstone that does their positioning, but that's just not smart baseball. And once again, I compare everything to what would DVH do? Our outfielder doesn't play like that. If we're in that situation, our left fielder is going to play, even if we think the guy's going to hit it in the gap, he's going to play deep and still cheat the line a little bit, just in case that happens. And I thought it was a huge unforced error by LSU, and it cost them the game, because that left fielder had a long way to go. By the time he got there, the minute he had that little bobble, I mean, we knew Edmondson was going to score. And I love what DVH said about Will Edmondson running the bases. People don't understand, if you make a wide turn at third, every step towards the dugout is another step away from home plate. You are, so one step out of the baseline is another step back in. So that's two steps. That's the difference in scoring and not scoring. And I don't think other teams focus on stuff like that. I think Razorbacks do. And I think it's, I had a long talk with Phil Elson about base running and all the things that we did in the course of that series, running the bases, that was huge for us, that saved us runs or got us an extra run.
Edmondson had another moment in game three where he came home from third on a little dribbler out to the mound and scored right underneath the throw. And then I thought it was interesting when they were playing Arkansas State last night. Did you notice when McLaughlin hit his home run in the second inning, Edmondson was on second base. He sprinted. He didn't, I don't know if he didn't know the ball went out or if it was just, I mean, he sprinted from second to home on that home run. He was probably home in, I don't know, 8 seconds. See, it was fast.
That's awesome. That's Razorback baseball right there. But hey, to your point about him scoring on that comebacker, that was
huge. A go ahead run.
Yeah, and the thing is you usually don't score on that. You know, it was a read play. They weren't really going down angle. It was kind of a read play where they leave it up to Will to decide. But there was a big body lefty on the mound, falling off to the right side, to the third base side. It was a dribbler to the first base side, just to the side of the mound. It wasn't like way to the right, but that's hard for a big body lefty that's probably not overly athletic, you know, just looking at his body, to turn and make that play and get up and make that throw to the plate. So I thought that was an awesome read. But what was awesome about it is in the midst of all the chaos, Peyton Stovall steps up. Everyone's like riled up about that. The pitcher's probably mad. First pitch fastball, boom, two-run homer. That's the difference in the game. So
bullpen gave Arkansas 5 really solid innings in game 2.
Oh, yeah.
Who stood out?
Putting
you on the spot.
I tell you what, Fouch. I thought Christian Fouch was awesome coming in.
Did he hit 100 on the gun or was it 99?
Matt Hobbs said he hit 101 warming up.
Okay.
One of the scouts got him at 101 warming up. I didn't see it, but I had him at 99 multiple times. And he was incredible. 2 innings, no hits, struck out 1. But he just – no one hits the ball hard. Mm-hmm. Even Tommy White got up there and swung at a first-pitch fastball and dribbled it to first base. And it looked like a panic swing to me. You don't see Tommy White take many swings like that, but that was a get me out of here swing, get me back to the dugout. Because when a guy's throwing 99 and it's a 2-seam fastball running in on you, that's a really hard pitch to hit.
So talk to me about the grip, because we've heard with Fouch there's a new grip on this fastball that's changed it. Where last year it was just kind of a flat plane fastball that was getting hit quite a bit, and now this year it's got a lot of sink on it that's not getting hit.
Well, last year he was a 4-seam guy,
okay,
and he was basically a 2-pitch guy, a 4-seam fastball with a nasty split. Well, if you're game planning for a guy like that, it's easy. I don't care if a guy throws 100. If it's straight, it's going to get hit. So all he did is flip his grip around. Now he's throwing a 2-seam fastball, still throwing at 99, but it's got a ton of horizontal break, arm side in on a righty away from a lefty. Totally changes him. Still got his nasty split. I want to say he struck Bingham out on a splitty that was just one of the dirtiest pitches I've seen all year. And he's got a slider that he uses a little bit. He doesn't have – his other 2 pitches are so good, Matt. All he's got to do is show the slider. It doesn't have to be a great pitch. Just show it every once in a while just to say, hey, by the way, I got a slider that's going to go this way along with my 99-mile-an-hour fastball going arm side.
When did we start putting Y's on the end of all these baseball terms? Like splitties. I saw, you know, somebody was talking the other day about punchies. That's what you're calling strikeouts now. Like where did this all come from? It seems like it's fairly new.
You know, there's a lot of new things. Punchy. I don't think I've ever used the term punchy though. I don't think
incorporate that against Ole Miss.
Yeah, I might have to. I'll work that into the broadcast now that you said that.
Game 3, they beat LSU. Didn't get a great start from Brady Tigert. Command was better. It's just LSU hit him well. LSU hit into 3 double plays. Tommy White hit into all 3 of those double plays for LSU. And then going back to what we were talking about, the response from Arkansas, they're down 4-1. LSU's hit 3 home runs at that point. They get a big 3-run 4th inning, get a big 3-run 7th or 6th inning, where you had the play by Edmondson that we referenced. Peyton Stovall had a 2-run home run. He had an incredible week, by the way, against LSU. I think he was like 7 for 13, had 3 multi-hit games. We were talking about this beforehand. You said there was a question asked in the press conference the night before. Basically, you know, it's like you're just kind of playing with house money in game 3 because you've already won the series. And you and I look at this differently than I think a lot of people do. I think a lot of people say, okay, well, you know, you won the series against them. A sweep is just icing on the cake. But we look at this from a 30-game standpoint where they're in this race to win the SEC and every game really matters. And they were able to, you know, get a really important win that might come back and benefit them when May rolls around.
No, absolutely. Yeah, and I mentioned it to you, the question, and you know, I'm not gonna say who asked the question. I mean, you know, they're asking, they're doing the best they can, and I think they ask a lot of really good questions in the post game press conference. I love listening to it. But this one question I didn't like, saying, you know, do you feel like you're playing with house money, you know, tomorrow going out there? And I think that's a totally wrong way to look at it. And I think some teams look at it like that. That's why you see Sundays get crazy or game 3 of a series get crazy sometimes. Teams win the first 2 games and they're like, we got the series won. It's all about winning a series. Well, no, it's not. It's about getting wins. That win column doesn't know if you swept a team or what. It just knows that you got 30 games you have to win. So I didn't like that. I didn't really like the question, and I don't want a team thinking like that, but I promise you a DVH team isn't going to go out there and just roll the ball out there and say, oh, we've won the series. Let's let it go.
I knew they were going to win when you brought a big old pan of fried chicken into the press box. I was like, you know, you talked last week about you wanted to drive chicken trucks for Tyson when you grew up, and here you are delivering chicken like three days later.
There you go. Hey, I want to give a shout out to Pat Anderson from Simmons Bank. He met me downstairs and asked if we wanted that, and he played with the Hogs back in like 78, 79 with Norm DeBrine.
He's the only former Norm DeBrine player who threw him out as an umpire, threw him out of a 1985 game.
Oh, really?
That's right, yeah.
Wow, that's some Cliff Clavin stuff there. How do you know that?
Well, we can get into that later. Looked it up earlier this year, actually.
That's awesome. But no, the the chicken was awesome. So I, you know, gave Phil some, stopped in at booth and gave Brett Dolan, Troy Eklund some, and then brought it down there to
and
you
then
guys.
You had
so
about
hopefully
30 chicken breasts left over that you brought into that. I mean, it's a big old box about like this. You know, the story of the weekend was Will McIntyre writing his name into the lineup card. Did you realize that he had done that? Because I know you see the lineup card beforehand, and you know, the picture that I saw too didn't have McIntyre's name on it, and then later on, obviously, it's there. And explain to people the difference between a roster and a lineup card and why his name wouldn't be on there in the first place.
Well, so the first thing I do when I get to the field, I go down there, and the lineup's posted in dugout, so I always take a picture of it. And a lot of times, if I'm there first, I'll take it, and I'll send it to Phil. Phil will do the same to me. Troy Eklund, Brett Dolan, like, we'll share it a lot. But I'm kind of, how can I say it? I'm kind of a creature of habit, a little bit psycho. I like to take my own picture. Just something about it. I don't know why. So I take the picture, and I'll look at it. And I really didn't notice it, to be honest with you, until later when I study it, because I always want to know which pictures are active that day. So, and then later on, I looked at it, and I noticed Will written in black. And I'm like, hey, what's going on there? But the difference is he threw 62 pitches on Thursday night.
Right.
So, you know, it's one of those things. Will would pitch every day.
You don't want to ask him, hey, can you give us an inning? Because he's going to tell you he's going to give you an inning.
He's going to say, yeah. I mean, obviously.
You want him to volunteer that.
So when Dave posts the lineup early so the players can see, you know, Will wasn't on there. And I guess apparently Will saw that. And it's like, hey, I'm good to go. Mm-hmm. Went and asked Hobbs if it was okay. And Matt's like, yeah, go ahead if you put your name on there. So he went and wrote his name in there. But I think it's awesome. And as it turned out, it was huge that he did that because, you know, he got some big outs for us in that game.
Got the biggest out of the game, bases loaded, eighth inning, comes in against a guy who'd hit two home runs. And, you know, that's that. Got him through a jam in the ninth inning, too. We got plenty more coming up on the Whole Hog Baseball podcast. But first, a word from our sponsor.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
And welcome back into the Whole Hog Baseball podcast. This is the point in the podcast where we take Q&A from our message boards at wholehogsports.com. Our producer, Blake Sutton, is going to help us out with this. So, Blake, what's up first?
All right, guys. First question is from Gentry Razorback. I'm concerned that we are who we are offensively. What are we doing for this? Is there still hope for improvement offensively? Am I jumping the gun?
So Arkansas obviously is lower in the SEC and in some offensive standings. What are your thoughts, Bubba?
I'm not concerned at all, Gentry. I tell you what, we're trending in the right way. I mean, we really are. I think we're going in the right direction. We're a team that we capitalize on another team's mistakes. We're scoring enough runs to get by. We're not striking out a lot, and that's a sign of a good team, good disciplined team. I just feel like we're getting better every week. I really do. And we've seen some pretty good pitching. So, but I like the direction we're going. I'm not worried at all. Now, if we were striking out a ton, I'd be worried.
I was writing something on Peyton Stovall this week, and I was just looking at the offensive numbers before he got into the lineup versus what they are now. And they're staying really steady. And now you might look at that and say, oh, well, that's not a sign of improvement. But the pitching has gotten a lot better, you know, since he came back. Obviously, they started SEC play. And so, to me, that's the sign that they're doing better offensively, the fact that those numbers – because a lot of times when you start SEC play, those offensive numbers that you've built up through the non-conference, they start to plummet. And right now, for the most part, you know, their offensive numbers, whether it be on base, slugging, batting average, runs per game, it's all staying really steady from where they were in the non-conference. And again, you just don't have to score a whole lot of runs with the way this pitch. There are going to be bad pitching days. But the number that stands out to me the most right now is that they're outscoring teams by about 3.1 runs per game in SEC play. I think they are who they are offensively. I don't know how much that improves, but I think Peyton Stovall has added a little bit of a spark to the lineup, Blake.
All right. Next question comes from Eldo Hogg. With Ben Bibee, Hunter Dietz, and Dylan Carter back from injury and sickness, what roles do you think they are eventually expected to fill?
You want to take this?
Well, I tell you, they deepen our bullpen. Mm. They really do. Like, you look at Hunter Dietz coming out the other night. I'll tell you, a lot of people look at it and say, well, he didn't pitch very well, you know, and it's one of those welcome to college baseball, you know, Hunter facing Tommy White in a two-run ball game. But if you look at the way Hunter Dietz pitched, he walked Tommy White, got a chopper over Ben McLaughlin's head, unfortunate break. If that ball's lower, he turns two on that. Mm-hmm. Strikes out the next guy, the 3-0 hitter, Jared Jones. Travinsky hits a ground ball up the middle. Aloy would have been an easy 6-4-3 double play. The ball came up on Aloy, ended up getting out at first. Then he hit Pearson with a 1-2 curveball. Pearson's leaning out over the plate. The ball's about an inch from being a strike. Once again, he's out of the inning. I thought he looked awesome for a kid to get his first college experience. I think the three of the guys together, they just lengthen our bullpen. Plus, they'll beef up what we got to do on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, because there's a couple of Tuesday-Wednesday games. We had Texas Tech coming in town in a couple weeks on a Tuesday and Wednesday. We're going to need those guys.
And San Jose State, too. I mean, they were an NCAA tournament team last year. That's a team that could be, I don't know about dangerous, but it's an interesting – it's one of those series that kind of flies under the radar, I think, next week when San Jose State comes in. I feel like Dietz is going to be a weekend pitcher for them. I'm really curious to see what they're going to do midweek starting-wise with Bibee and Fisher. Do they start one on a Tuesday and start one on a Wednesday? Because if they do, that's a really good 1-5 starting rotation for a college team.
It really is. And I think a lot of it's going to depend on what happens on the weekend before, how much they have to use them. If they can get through the weekend and not have to use them.
Because winning the SEC games is going to be priority. That's going to be paramount.
Yeah, if they need Colin Fisher on a weekend, they're going to bring him in and use him as much as they need to. But the beauty of it is we got multiple other arms. I think the only thing that would – if one of the starters faltered, like if Brady Tigard has a bad start and they've really got to deplete the bullpen on a – you know, this week would be on a Saturday, I think that would affect the Tuesday-Wednesday rotation.
All right, Blake.
All right, next question is from you to man. What is the throwing routine in between appearances? Are pitchers required to do a lot of running and stretching?
I know, Bubba, you actually looked into this a little bit.
Yeah, you know what? I actually called Matt Hobbs last night after. I texted him and said, hey, you got a second to talk? Because I was curious about that. Also, everyone's kind of got their own routine that they do. You look at your starters, and, you know, the starters are on a different regimen because they know exactly when they're going to pitch. Like a Hagen Smith, he's going to, after his start, he's got mobility workouts that he's going to do the next day, which is more body weight stuff, a lot of stretching, flexibility stuff. Then the next day after that, he's got a heavy lift. He'll lift heavy. He'll do some upper body stuff, lower body stuff. Then when you get into a Tuesday, let's say he's starting on a Thursday, his Tuesday regimen is a light bullpen, you know, probably – I want to say Hobbs 20, 25 pitches, working 75-80%, just nice and easy, just working on mechanics. Your bullpen guys, I actually called, texted Dylan Carter last night, and Dylan texted me because I want going to get the bullpen guys. I know their routine is different. He had already, when I talked to him, he had already come out of the game, you know, did the team meeting. He'd already done his J-bands. Mm-hmm. They've got stuff they do after they throw. They're not allowed. They can't lift a lot of heavy stuff because they don't know when they're going to be used. So their workouts, same thing. He'll do a mobility workout today, which is a light workout. Said he'll play some catch, do a little bit of throwing, work on his spins, you know, just spinning his breaking ball, his slider and all that, change-ups, all that, just kind of really working on just getting a feel for the ball and then be ready for Thursday night, just because you don't know as a bullpen guy if you're going to be Thursday, Friday, Saturday. But technology's come a long way. It used to be when guys got done throwing, it's here, go run 10 foul poles. Mm-hmm. It's different now. Everything's so much more scientific, and they work specific things to get ready for their next outing.
We should have asked about Stone Hewlett. What's his between, because he's throwing every day. Just, and even on Saturday against LSU, he had thrown five games in a row, and he was up throwing in the ninth inning of that game if they needed him to come in and face a lefty.
You know, I would like to know that. I think Stone's a lot like Will McIntyre. I think Stone would pitch every day if he could.
Rubber arm?
Yeah.
Rubber arm. All right, Blake.
All right, this next one is from Mr. Beeswax. But it's Mr. B apostrophe S wax, so I think this guy might be a candle salesman or something. What are the coaches working with Gage Wood on for him to re-enter DVH's Circle of Trust pitcher group?
Circle of Trust. I think if he pitches like he did last night, he's going to get there pretty quick. Eight strikes and 11 pitches, faced three batters, struck out two of them, no base runners. That was an impressive performance, but I think the best we've seen from him this year.
I agree. Said it on the air last night. I said this: the fastball was jumping out of his hand. He was 94, 95 again. His velo's been a little bit down. Fastball's been a little bit flat. Last night it had some life on it, but more importantly, that slider had some bite on it. Where Gage has got in trouble is getting ahead of hitters, and then he'll float a breaking ball up there, and it gets hammered. Last night his slider had some bite on it, had a little cut fastball, so I thought he looked really good last night. Last night's the best I've seen Gage all year.
All right, Blake.
All right, last one from Sui Squad. Was Jake Faraday's cutter we saw against Arkansas State a new pitch? Seems like he was gas and sliders previously. That 88 to 90 cutter was filthy.
So the answer is it's a new pitch this year. It's not a new pitch. It wasn't debuted against Arkansas State. This is something we saw in the preseason scrimmages. He really impressed me a couple of times when he was throwing in January and February, where he was not only landing that, but he was landing it in the strike zone. And so, like last night we were talking about this. He was getting a lot of people to swing at it outside the zone. In the preseason, we were seeing him land it in the strike zone. He was getting some called strikes with that pitch too. But whenever he can complement the fastball with that cutter, slider, whatever you want to call it, it's an impressive 1-2 pitch for what I think is a closer type.
I did too. I mean, he's got closer stuff. His stuff's electric. But, you come in and you're throwing – whether you call it a cutter, if you look at the pitching chart, it says cutter there, but it acts more like a really good slider at 88 to 90 miles an hour.
Probably just shocked that somebody can throw a slider that hard.
Oh, and it's dirty too. It's got so much late action on it.
Yeah.
Whatever you call it, I think it's one of those, like Hob said, you can call it, we're talking about a Cops' cutter. You can call it Steve if you want. It doesn't matter.
It's an alien pitch. Yeah.
As long as it gets outs. But Faraday's got electric stuff, so I think they want him to throw that pitch a lot. You throw that pitch 70, 80% of the time, but you can't sit on that pitch because he's got 95 to 99. He can run by you with a fastball from a three-quarter arm slot, which is just nasty for a righty. That's a very uncomfortable at bat for a right-handed batter. If Jake can do that, I tell you what, he's going to be a guy that's going to be really valuable for us down later in the year. And I think the more he gets out there, the better he's going to get.
We appreciate your questions. You can submit more of them on our message boards at wholehogsports.com. We talked about Peyton Stovall's offense, but you and I were talking the other day, his defense, he's surrounding the ball when he comes in on some of these rollers to second base. They're difficult plays, but he's making them easier on throws to first because of the way he's positioning himself before he gets to the ball.
I love it. I brag on Stovall all the time on the air. And, I actually talked to DVH yesterday before the game, and I told him, I said, look, I'd heard Dave talk about how good his defense was.
Mm-hmm.
I'm surprised at how good his defense is. I didn't know he was that good defensively, to be honest with you. I knew he could swing the bat. I watched him as a freshman. I knew he could swing, but I didn't expect this much out of him defensively, Matt. Some of those plays that he makes coming in, he circles that ball. It's a slow roller right by second base bag. Mm-hmm. He's able to come in, create a slight angle to make that throw to first base. I watch other second basemen come straight into the ball, and what happens? Their ball sails into the baseline or into the dugout.
Mm-hmm.
Just that quick, it's that first step that gets you around the ball. His ability to read the ball off the bat's incredible. Never gets a bad hop, and I say all the time, good infielders create their own hops, and Stovall's, it's amazing. Just watching him play the game, I'm surprised at how much range he has. It's incredible watching him. It's honestly a clinic in how to play second base.
And the shoulder's held up. I'm not sure the shoulder, it's healthy enough to play, but I'm not sure it's 100% in terms of what it's going to be at some point. And you made a comment the other day. You said it reminded you a little bit of Robert Moore.
Yeah. When Robert was here, I'm like, gosh, what are we going to do when Robert leaves? And now you got Peyton Stovall. And look, I love Robert Moore, but
I mean, now you ask, what are you going to do when Peyton Stovall leaves?
Right? I know. Yeah. But then you got Sousa.
Yeah.
I mean, just think of it. It's I don't know. It's you said it. How did you describe it? A golden era of Razorback baseball.
Golden era. Yeah.
I mean, just look. I mean, Sousa's a stud. I'm sorry. The guy is a dude. In a couple of years, scouts are going to be all over this guy. He's going to be he's going to go high in the draft.
What stands out to me about this team, and it's not just this year's team. It's been this way probably for about 2 or 3 years now. There are so many players on the bench who would be maybe not the guy on previous year's rosters, but they'd be considered one of your best players. And now it's not to say they're not good and there's a role for them. You know, I think that Arkansas doesn't win the SEC last year if it doesn't have that deep bench. You think about Reese Robinette coming out and hitting a home run against LSU, yeah. Or Hunter Grimes and the defensive play that he made against Texas A&M that helped him in that game. Those are two wins that you look back on at the end of the year and say, hey, you don't win an SEC without those plays. But where I'm going with this is, like, there's just so many quality players on the bench that I don't think we saw in previous years. It might be, I don't know, maybe it's a byproduct of the expanded rosters. I'm not sure what it is, but it's the last 3 or 4 years really stand out to me about the quality of the bench players.
I think so. And what I love about it, Matt, is in today's game of transfer portal, NIL, where everyone's playing for the name on the back of the jersey, our guys are still playing for the name on the front.
They get them to buy in.
They really do. And it's a huge testament to DVH and his staff to get those guys to come out and play Razorback baseball. The thing I notice when I'm up in the booth, I can see down in the dugout. And I used to say all the time, when I would do scouting stuff for Yankees, I would go down the right field line so I could see in that first – or left field line so I could see in that first base dugout. I always want to see what's going on when people think you can't – no one can see them. And I watch the guys that are not starters are the guys in the dugout. They're always hyped up. They're the first ones on the top step when someone scores. And that's the kind of culture you want. You want your team. And these guys are working hard. You know, I said something to Jack Wagner the other day. I said, man, I appreciate how hard you've been working. He goes out and works every day, and he got a chance, goes out there and hits a couple of home runs. And that's the kind of stuff you want to see. And Peyton Holt's another perfect example of it. The guy's always upbeat in the dugout. When he gets his chance, he goes in there and takes advantage of it.
So Arkansas hosts Ole Miss this weekend. Ole Miss comes in on a four-game losing streak. They're 18-12 overall. They're 3-6 in conference play. As Bubba taps the Dallas Keuchel bobblehead here on our table. By the way, I was telling you this earlier. I was looking at a picture last night. I was trying to figure out. I couldn't remember what number Dallas wore at Arkansas. And it's so random that you bring this bobblehead in and how all this works together. I Google Dallas Keuchel Arkansas, see that he wore number 29, and then like the seventh image on the Google the search list is this bobblehead. And it says this bobblehead's going for like $165 on eBay. Did you buy it on eBay last night?
Nope, didn't buy it on eBay. It's been in Dalton's room. So don't be eyeballing my Keuchel. I see you looking at it.
Extra cash.
But, you know, I figured as good as the pitching's been, last week I had DVH here. This week I brought it. I brought Keuchel in honor of the pitching staff.
How many Razorback bobbleheads do you have? Because I think they've made a handful.
Yeah, I've got three
six,
or four.
Seven.
I've got three or four.
I know they made one of Norm. They won. You brought your Dave Van Horn one last week. I think they had a Tom Pagnozzi at one point.
Yeah, you know what?
Keuchel, I need Benintendi.
I've got a Benintendi one. I need a Norm DeBrine one. If anyone out there has a Norm DeBrine one, please let me know. I used to have one, and mm-hmm. I don't know what happened to it. You didn't sell it on eBay.
No, I did not. I haven't had any. Actually, I did. Somebody did give me one of the Benintendi bobbleheads, and my son, when he was about two, decided to rip his head off, and so. It's who would be next for a bobblehead in Arkansas? It's gotta be Copps, right?
Yeah, I think Kevin Copps. Yeah, it's gotta be. Or you go Copps or Heston Kerstad. I'd love a Heston Kerstad bobblehead. I'd be in line for that one.
Maybe a James McCann. I think he'd fit in that.
Yeah, McCann would. How about a Matt Jones?
Yeah, I don't think anybody wants that. Maybe the other Matt Jones, the quarterback. I don't know if I get some people in the baseball park. So Ole Miss, they lose to Memphis last night, 9-4. They did not look good in their series last week against Kentucky at home. I mean, Kentucky just blew them out of their ballpark once or twice. Yeah. This it feels like this is kind of a make or break year for Bianco. I mean, we all know how much pressure he was under whenever they won the World Series 2 years ago, and it just hasn't gone well for him since, and it looks like this year may be another repeat of last year.
Well, you remember a couple years ago, everyone was talking about Bianco getting fired. They were the last team in the NCAA tournament, and we all know what happened.
I give you so much credit. You saw them about 4 weeks before the end of the regular season. You said, I would not want to play this team in the postseason right now. You called that one.
Well, I love their lineup. They just had veteran guys, and Tim Elko was a leader. You know, the whole Elko story, you know, I'm not an Ole Miss fan. It's no secret. But I love the story of Tim Elko, and I think they rallied around him that year. And, man, I just knew they had a good lineup. It was a matter of time. And, boy, they got it going at the right time. And, we all know what happened. But this year they just don't have that. They don't have that. I compare it to, like, LSU. LSU, you know, you lose Dylan Cruz and Skeens last year. LSU doesn't play with that same passion that I've seen LSU teams play for in the past. They don't play hard. They don't play scrappy. And I haven't got to see, other than just a little bit on TV, I haven't seen a lot of Ole Miss. But looking at their numbers, and, man, they're just missing something. But who knows, man? Anything can happen in the SEC West when Ole Miss comes to town. Anything can happen.
Isn't it interesting to you how the last three national champions, they're all SEC West teams, and they have all – we'll see how this year goes for LSU. I don't see this being a repeat of Mississippi State and Ole Miss the previous 2 years for LSU, but they're not playing well right now. They're 2-7 in the SEC. They lost to Southern on Monday night, 12-7 at Alec Box Stadium. I mean, things are not going well. It's interesting to me how these last three national champions they just haven't been able to keep the momentum from the championship season.
And I don't get that. And, you know, people talk all the time. You know, you listen to some guys talk about, you know, I listen to Ty Richardson in the morning when I'm dropping little men off to school, and he talks about, you know, until you win a national championship, you're not considered good, or however Ty words it. I don't know.
Yeah, I disagree with that.
I disagree completely. You know, Dave Van Horn's best coach in college baseball, hands down. He hadn't won a national championship, but he's still the best coach in baseball. I wouldn't trade look at Mississippi State. They won it. And
I've
then
asked
they
you
were,
this question. I know where you're going with this. You wouldn't trade a national championship for a, you know, like a 5-7 year run like Arkansas is on.
Right. Right. I mean, you look at Mississippi State and Ole Miss, they're basically irrelevant ever since they won the national championship. Yeah. I wouldn't trade that. I like where we're at as a program. You know, our time's coming. This team's special. This might be the year. I mean, it's so many things have to go right. You know, I'm not going to say, oh, we're going to win it all this year, you know. But I'm saying this team's special, and this team makes breaks, and that's what the good teams do, and that's what you got to have to win a national championship. But, yeah, I wouldn't trade anything. But it's funny to see these teams kind of win it and go downhill. I don't know if they get complacent. I don't know if that comes from the coaching staff, like Bianco. They get complacent after
they lose
win
a
it.
Fire after they win a championship.
I don't know. That wouldn't happen to DVH. I guarantee if we win it this year, DVH is going to go double down and win it again the following year. He's not going to get complacent. He's got that fire in him, and –
yeah, he's talked a lot of times since the Hunt Center opened, that big building over in Wright Field, $27 million, like 45,000 square feet. It's, if you've ever been in an SEC football development building, say like the Smith Center at Arkansas, this is its equal, and it's for a college baseball team. But he's always talked about keeping a blue collar approach, even though you have this Taj Mahal type facility. I just wonder if that happens everywhere.
I think it does. I honestly do. I think it happens other places. It'll never happen here under DVH. Mm. I mean, his brand of baseball, what he demands out of the players, you know, just like going back to the simple base running, the dirt ball reads, the reads at third, the way they circle the bases, just all the little things add up. And, you know, that's the game of baseball. All those little things add up to big things.
So Ole Miss, you look at them, you know, offensively, their numbers are pretty comparable, I think, to Arkansas's. You know, batting average, runs per game, they're all, you know, kind of in the same ballpark. What really sets these two teams apart is their pitching numbers. Ole Miss, obviously Arkansas is at the top of the league in a lot of pitching metrics, top of the nation in quite a few too. Ole Miss is toward the bottom of the league in pitching, and so it looks like a mismatch on paper. Arkansas is playing well. Ole Miss is not playing well. How do you think that shakes out this weekend?
You look at it two ways. You can look at it and say, we're better than they are. I mean, we are. We're a better team. We're a better coach. Everything is better. Or you can look at it and say, this is a team that's coming in here desperate. They're desperate. They really need a couple of wins. And, you know, you get a team when their back's against the wall, it can be dangerous. So, I mean, we're going to have to go out and play good Razorback baseball. But I think it's going to be a good series for us.
Brady Tynkert, how does he bounce back?
Oh, he's going to be fine. I thought he made some really good pitches. He's not Brady of old, but he's getting back in the right direction. I thought he landed some really good fastballs in. Honestly, he made three bad pitches and gave up three home runs. You know, I thought he threw Tommy White three sliders in a row. You can see Tommy getting close. Third slider's down in the zone. He hits it over the fence to left field. I wish he'd have elevated a fastball right there, but it's easy. That's the what if game. You know, if he throws a fastball and he gets hit over, you can say, well, gosh, why didn't he go back to his slider? That's his best pitch. You know, you look at Bingham. He threw him five fastballs in a row. Hit the fifth one 400 feet to left field. Well, why didn't he go breaking ball there? But once again, if he goes breaking ball and he hits it over, he's like, well, he was late on the fastball. Why did you go fastball? I mean, it's so easy. I think it was Pearson to hit the ball over the right field fence. One-two fastball. Well, he's got a good changeup. What do you go? Do you see where I'm going with
no,
that?
I do, yeah.
I think he looked, even though he gave up a few home runs, I thought overall his pitch ability was better. I thought he made some really good pitches. Yeah, he left a few over the middle of the plate, and that happens. But I expect him to keep getting better every week. And I still – people have asked me, are we going to change our rotation? No, I want the ball in Brady's hands on Saturday, and I feel really good about it.
It'll be interesting to see how as we record this, I believe Dave Van Horn's actually speaking to some reporters. So it'll be interesting to see how they go game one, game two, game three. But I would suspect it'll probably keep it the same as they did against LSU because it worked. And obviously we keep Molina and Tigert on their normal, you know, their pitching rest with it being another Thursday, Friday, Saturday series. For Tigert, I think playing Ole Miss is a big thing for him because, you know, he's from there south of Memphis, not too far from Oxford. They didn't offer him out of high school. And I think there's a little bit of attitude because I remember, I think it was against Ole Miss. He actually, I think he may have gotten his interview privileges taken away for a little bit because of this. But you remember this press conference? They played Ole Miss here a couple of years ago, and they asked him, you know, did Ole Miss offer you? He said no, and they're like, well, who offered you? He said, the only other offer I had was Mississippi State, and I didn't want to wear that ugly shade of maroon. it's a big deal for him, I think, to play Ole Miss.
I think so, and look, I know, knowing how Brady Tigert is and his makeup, I wouldn't be surprised if he goes out there Saturday and just shoves, just absolutely dominates, because that's how he is. I mean, that's how Brady is. He's got that fire in him. And I really think, not that he needs anything else to get him more fired up, but I think it's going to be a good day for him, Matt.
This is going to be the last Thursday, Friday, Saturday series for Arkansas until the end of the year. They're going to play Thursday, Friday, Saturday against Texas A&M. And the way these two teams are going right now, that could be an absolutely huge series at the end of the year down in College Station. But Thursday, Friday, Saturday, it's going to be on SEC Network Thursday night at 6, 6:30 on Friday, 2 o'clock on Saturday. You can hear Bubba on the Razorback Sports Network. We hope that you'll come to WholeHogSports.com and read all of our coverage from Arkansas and Ole Miss. We'll be back next Wednesday at the same time for another Whole Hog Baseball podcast to talk about that series and look ahead to the Razorbacks weekend series at Alabama. For Bubba Carpenter, I'm Matt Jones. We appreciate you joining us, and we'll see you next time on the Whole Hog Baseball podcast.
Go Hogs.
Thanks to Kendall King, where their design talents are showcased by teamwork. Kendall King, Shop Cart, and Soapbox. They're your design professionals with home run stats.